I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns. Our producer and engineer, of course, is Bill Kaposky. And this is, I can't hear myself, Coach. You can hear me, right?
Yes, I can.
Well, you're on the phone, so I wonder, let me just check my levels here and see if the meters are saying that I'm on. They're saying I'm on, but very low. Oh, you know why? I have the wrong microphone. Don't leave the room.
Unbelievable.
Don't leave the room. Here's the mic. I found it. I found it. It was buried under my notebook.
Yeah.
Well, it's all your fault, Kearns.
Of course it is.
Where are you?
I'm in my office.
Uh-huh. And that's not in my studio. All right, here we go. Now I got to turn it down a little bit. It's too loud. I found the right mic. I got the right one, Coach. So, you think this is a little amateurish?
We've been amateurish since 2006.
That's true. Okay, let's get this thing rolling. I am Rick Moore. That is Tim Kearns. Tim is our super analyst and our ambassador of goodwill. Of course, Bill Newell is the master of everything here at MSO, and Bill Kaposky is our producer and engineer. As we speak, it's a stormy Monday night here on the East Coast, and on the very East Coast, out on Cape Ann, it's raining here. It's funny, Tim. Harvey Leonard put us in. Get this. Now there's three lines over Cape Ann. One is 1 to 3 inches. Another one is 4 to 10 inches, and then the other one is 10 to 18. So ostensibly, we're from like 1 to 18 inches here on Cape Ann. But right now, it's raining. How is it in Beverly?
Well, I'm looking out the window, and I'm seeing wet streaks.
Okay.
Well, it's wet. It's raining.
Hope it stays that way. We have a lot to talk about tonight. We're going to be checking in with Beverly High School in a little bit. The hockey coach, the boys hockey coach, Greg Fonzie, will be talking about a big win that they had over the weekend. Also check in with Matt Karakoudis. I have that interview posted, but Coach Karakoudis of Beverly High School boys basketball. Last time we talked to him was at the Boston Garden on March 11, 2020, 2 days before everything shut down. And Coach Karakoudis has his team at 4-0. Beverly is at 3-3, but they had a huge win over the weekend, and we'll talk about that with Coach Fonzie. We'll also be checking in with Gary Larrabee on golf and Mike Grenier on the Celtics and other stuff. But Tim, I want to ask you, there's so much going on, and we'll get to the boys hockey in a minute here, but about the moves by the Red Sox, what's your analysis of them? What are they doing?
You know, Rick, I've been trying to figure it out since, we started talking about the possibility of the Sox starting up. That's after Troyer retired, which I think a lot of people aren't surprised by, given his physical situation, the injuries over the last couple of years, and his limited playing time because of it. Signing a 34-year-old to strengthen your bullpen, even though he's a local guy, doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense to me. You're looking at a guy that you're going to have to monitor innings, you know, a guy who's liable to break down. So, you know, it could be just more of the same back in, at the back end of the rotation and in the bullpen. They're not signing anybody big. They're not signing anybody that has cost them a lot of money, but certainly, they haven't signed anybody that has a dramatic or impactful record. And that could have the fans concerned, considering what happened last year. Bringing back Cora is part of the move to get the fans back. You know, popular choice. He served his time. And, you know, we know how well he worked for the Sox a couple of years ago. Can he catch the magic again? That's what the Sox are hoping.
I think what concerns me is that there was no oomph last year, no spark, no anything for a fan to latch onto. And, you know, they've got Rafael Devers, they've got Martinez, and what do they have after that?
Yeah, that's the thing, you know, Mookie's gone. Is Jackie Bradley going to be gone? You know, are they going to move him before the season starts?
Well, they got a center fielder, didn't they?
Yeah, well, yeah. I just like Jackie's.
Yeah, but that's my point, Tim. They got a serviceable center fielder. You know, they got a serviceable right fielder, and they gave up Mookie Betts. You know, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Where's the draw?
Talk about the possibility of Benintendi being moved.
Well, he's been a major disappointment, obviously.
Well, he started on like a gangbuster, and then he kind of hit a wall. And last year was a bad year for him, but it was a bad year for everybody. Well, Martinez had an awful year last year, and yet everybody seems to be giving him a pass. Well, he's the guy making the big dollars on your team,
yeah.
And he's the guy that and Benintendi is not, because I think he's still under his rookie deal. So I'm more disappointed in Martinez than watching him last year at the plate. It's like he didn't. I'm sorry. It looked like he didn't care.
Well, he should have stayed. He should have taken the COVID option out then.
He was taking lazy swings. He was going after that low outside pitch that he loves to hunt, and just doesn't get to often enough. I mean, he was just like, you know, the old Bugs Bunny play ball cartoon where Bugs is pitching and he's throwing it by everybody, and it was 1-2-3, you're out, 1-2-3, you're out. Well, that's what Martinez was like there, 1-2-3, you're out. He goes back and he sits down. There's no passion in his face. There's no disgust. There's no pissed off. There was no energy. And I was like, I don't even want to watch him hit.
Well, a couple of other questions. What about two things? Chris Sale, haven't heard anything about him. And the idea of putting the ball in play for a change.
Yeah. I think with Sale, I think they're just keeping him under wraps, you know, as not to build up expectations. For him or by the fans, and let him work in the shadows, and he comes back, and hopefully he'll be, you know, who he used to be. But you know, he was an injury just waiting to happen, and people have said that from the time that he got to the major leagues with that swinging sidearm and long and, you know, skinny and just that tremendous amount of torque he puts on his arm, and he was just waiting for a breakdown, and of course. It's once he comes to the Red Sox that he breaks out, top of the course. So there's, you know, there's a tremendous amount of expectation for this team. There's a tremendous amount of question mark on this team. And hopefully Cora has some of the answers. We'll find out.
Yes, we will. So it's going to start soon, I guess. So we'll see.
Yeah. You know, and is Cora going to have the leeway to do what's necessary, and is the front office going to do the thing that is necessary to get him the players that he's going to need?
Yeah.
That's the thing.
I don't know. I'm not optimistic, but we got a lot to talk about here tonight. Of course, the Super Bowl is coming up on Sunday, and it's funny. I haven't paid any attention to Tom Brady all year, but I did last week. And I'm rooting for Tom Brady because it would be like rooting for any greatest of all time that you watch. I mean, I people talk about you know, well, he's gone. Yeah, he's gone. And people talk about you know, I can't root for him because he was a Patriot or this or that or the other thing. But you know, Tim, I remember I'm a bona fide Red Sox lover and Yankee hater. But man, did I love Mickey Mantle. Man, did I love Mariano Rivera. You know, just guys who just, they rise above who they're pitching or playing with.
Yeah, those guys definitely, you know, transcended sport rivalries because of their greatness, certainly. And, you know, Kansas City, there's just something about Andy Reid that gets under my skin.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know what
yes.
it is from his time.
Yeah. Whatever. He's so smug. He's just smug.
Oh, he is. Yeah. He's a loser. So, you know, I'm hoping Brady is successful. I mean, you want to see him rack him up. you know, I'm not going goo-goo, you know, goo-goo for Tom like some people are. And I want to see a good game. You know, it's going to be interesting. Can he get the time he needs to, you know, can he get the 3 seconds he needs to scan the field and find?
I remember, Tim, interrupting you. I remember rooting for Y.A. Tittle and Charlie Connolly because they were both in their 40s on the same team. You know, and here's this guy in his 40s, and he's just doing stuff that no one has ever done before like this in the NFL. And as much as I didn't, you know, he left fine. I'm not a Tampa Bay fan, but I am pulling for him to come away with seven Super Bowl victories in a career. I mean, that's like watching Babe Ruth today or whatever, you know? It's really cool.
Yeah, he certainly is, and, you know, compared to a lot of guys that played late into their 30s and the few into their 40s, you have to give Tom credit simply for keeping himself in such great physical shape. Everybody slammed the TB12 method and all this stuff. But, you know, it's worked for him. He's kept his body, his mind, his throwing arm. You know, the play to me that really defined him last week was that one bad snap from the center that was high into the left. And he reached across his body and two-handed the catch and then snapped his hips back to the right, and he ended up in perfect throwing form to throw a pass out to the right side. And it was all done in basically one motion.
Yeah.
He reached across his body, and then he whipped himself around, perfect position to throw. You know, the back leg's pointed, the front knee is pointed, shoulders are pointed. It was just picture-perfect form within a matter of a second, and it was a bad snap.
How much of that is due to attention to detail and to repetitions and to workouts?
Oh, yeah. It's muscle memory, you know. He knows, I mean, he'll throw the occasional bad pass. But, you know, 90% of the time, you watch him throw. He scans the field, and when he makes his choice, he points at it. And it's all fundamental. And, you know, I go back, and I was mentioning it to me during the game. I said, you watch some of the things that that Brady does. And they're baseball moves. You know, just like Mahomes. Mahomes is a baseball player, and a lot of the ways that he throws are baseball throws, and I mentioned this last week. Those are baseball moves. And so these things are simply innate into them. They don't have to think about them because they've done them repetitively, not only just during one season, but over a couple of different athletic seasons. So the muscle memory is there, and it's just, okay, I'm going to throw this. I got to make a throw to the shot from shortstop to second base for a double play. Oh, I'm going to side on it. So that's his sidearm throw to the receiver out in the flat, or to get around a defender coming at him. It's just, they can do that so easily. And that's what really frustrates a lot of people, is how easily they do this.
Well, we'll see who's the master on Sunday. All right, Coach, we got to take a break here, and we'll come back with the Beverly High School hockey coach, Greg Fonzie. We'll be right back.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is working to help keep you and your community safe from the threat of novel or new coronavirus. Take the following everyday steps to help avoid the spread of all respiratory viruses. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Cover your cough or sneeze with a tissue. Throw the tissue away and then wash your hands. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects or surfaces, such as remote controls and doorknobs. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. And stay home if you are sick. Call your healthcare provider if you develop fever, cough, or difficulty breathing. For more tips, visit cdc.gov.
All right, we're back, and it's my great pleasure now to bring on once again Beverly High School hockey coach Greg Fonzie. And, Coach, welcome back to MSO. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, I live on Cape Ann, and it's raining here right now, so we're not getting any of the snow. Wherever you are, were you in Beverly?
I'm in Ipswich.
Ipswich. Is it snowing up there?
A little of both right now.
Okay. All right. So, you know, it is midwinter. Coach, first of all, congratulations on the big win on Saturday night. That's huge, and I want to get to that. But before we do that, we always like to check in with the coaches to see how it's been this year, because the NEC is functioning. It looks like everybody's playing, but things are a little different.
They're definitely different, and to be honest with you, to be talking with you today and having, you know, pretty much being up to date with all the games and the schedule so far this year has been amazing that we've been able to get this far. And that was our senior night Sunday, last night over at Revere, and to have the kids and their parents to be in the same place pretty much for the first time all year was amazing that we've been able to get that far.
Yeah, and I want to get to that outcome. And what about, I see on the schedule, were you scheduled to play today originally?
We were scheduled to play Danvers tonight. We pretty much knew early on that wasn't going to happen. They'll work on rescheduling that. But, you know, it's kind of crazy. It's nice not to have something canceled because of COVID, only because of
the weather. Okay, that's good. You told me what I wanted to hear. Greg, I got to tell you, man, your season got off to a tough start with, you know, you got Masco first on the draw and then Winthrop. And Winthrop was angry after their opening game. And so that was kind of a tough beginning. Tell me a little bit about how that early part of the season was and how you guys rebounded.
Well, one of the disappointing parts most people don't know is we weren't on the ice for 13 days before that because we had five cases of COVID. We were ready to go. 2 weeks, the kids were geared up. We pretty much had our plan in place, and we got a setback. But you really can't say that because everyone's had setbacks. So when we stepped on the ice against Masco, it was after 13 days of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So we took a 2-0 lead in that game, but they're a very strong team, very deep, and eventually they just wore us down. And then going into the Winthrop game, Dale Dunbar and the Winthrop Vikings are always well-coached and prepared. I think they also had another chip on their shoulder because we knocked them off twice last year, so they were more than ready for us. And we weren't quite ready for either one of those games.
You know, the other thing is, Coach, I look at the schedule, and of course, the Bork is closed, so you guys don't have a home rink. Where do you practice?
Pretty much everywhere. We have been, you know, at the Peabody rink, the Revere rink, both really nice facilities, not as close to home as our facility, obviously, but we've bounced around. The kids have been pretty resilient. Our administration has done everything to give us everything we need as far as ice time and to make sure the kids have what they need to prepare for the game. So we're doing okay in that department.
You know, the league is, I'm going to bring Tim on here in a minute, but the league is so wild this year. I mean, Masco now has sort of settled in at the top, which is not a surprise. But Gloucester then whacked you guys after you beat Swampscott, but then Gloucester's lost two. And then, you know, lo and behold, Saugus pulls out a win over the weekend. So what's your view of the NEC right now?
Well, I originally spent 10 years in the Middlesex League, and I think, to be honest with you, I think the NEC has as many good coaches as I've seen in one league. They have as many good teams, and what we're trying to do in Beverly is become one of those teams. You know, we've taken our hits for the last several years. There hasn't been a team over 500 since the state championship team here, and we're trying to change that a little bit. And you know, we came close last season several times. We couldn't finish games, and that's why I think our last two games, if you look what our kids have done in the third period, I think they're starting to believe what we can accomplish.
I want to get to that third period in a second here, but Marblehead had been sailing along pretty good. They've got their usual stuff. And then tell me about this game on Saturday, because looking at the score, and that's all I know at the moment, Coach, it looks pretty solid for Beverly, 4-0.
Well, I'll tell you what's happened in the last 10 days for us. After that Gloucester game was somewhat disappointing. We just made too many mistakes, and they have too many goal scorers on that team to do that. The one thing about COVID that's helped us, if anything, which I don't know if that's possible to get help during COVID, but all of these games are now being broadcasted. So we get a lot of film now, more than we've ever had.
Yeah.
So we've had a chance to break down Marblehead, break down Gloucester, because we'll see them again, and really prepare for this game that we played last night. And the Marblehead team is a big, strong team. I think the kid, Will Schell, the terrific player, probably the best player up and down in the league, as far as on both ends of the ice. But, you know, we went over what we had to do. I get a ton of help from my coach and staff, and we were probably as prepared as I've ever had a team.
That's,
and I, I think that's why the outcome, you know, was the way it was.
That's interesting with the video thing. Tim, you want to chime in here with Coach Fonzie?
Yeah, Coach, I want to go back to the beginning of the season when you had a whole bunch of kids down with the COVID. What do you do? What do you change in order to keep everybody focused, keep everybody getting in shape and getting prepared for the beginning of the season? Because, like as you mentioned, you sort of got caught a half a step behind. What do you do to prevent being too many steps behind once you got the season going?
Well, I'll be honest with you, it was tough, and you can tell by the start of our season, it was a difficult thing. You couldn't do too much. The one thing I wasn't going to do is rush them back into a situation like that and risk anyone else, you know, getting sick and having another setback. I spent an extra 3 days off the ice to make sure everybody was ready to come back. One of our boys, unfortunately, had to stay a couple extra days. He happened to score the winning goal the other night. But you know, truthfully, you had to make sure that you didn't put yourself in harm's way. It was a gradual return. It wasn't like we just jumped back into it, although it was a game first. And it took us about 10 days of repetition to get going again. It has been different, there's no doubt. But the one thing I tried to do, if this is possible, is, you know, make every practice count, make every game mean something for these kids. I've had people tell me that, you know, there's no tournament, there's no league title. You know, basically, these are scrimmage games. Well, our boys aren't taking it like that. They want to win every time they step on the ice.
That's called being competitive, isn't it?
I don't know another way. I
really yeah, really. Oh, my goodness. Coach, tell me now, the keys to the game against Marblehead and how that thing went and who your stars were.
Well, the keys were to be able to skate three lines against them, which is what we did. Our D-zone coverage was terrific. I mean, it was terrific, and we worked very hard on that. Our goaltending was terrific. You need both of those if you're going to compete. And during the early parts of that game, we had several neutral zone turnovers, and we were putting ourselves in trouble. The second and third period, what we did is we were able to match our third line, which is made up of two seniors and a junior, that against not just their third line but their second line. And once we could do that, and we saw how effective the forecheck was with our third line, our top two lines could roll against his number one. And when he shot in his bench, we didn't necessarily shot in ours, and that's why the third period turned out the way it did.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's pretty. That's got to make you feel good. And who were the stars of the game for you?
My goaltender was terrific. Brendan Sweeney is a senior for us. He's a transfer in from Malvern Catholic. He was terrific last night. And basically, you know, he struggled a little bit early this year, but he went back to basics, and he was on point. He was on his angle, square to the puck, handled everything. You know, and it was a slew of kids that, you know, it was senior night, and we had Danny Morency and Gavin Doyle, Max Murphy, those three seniors, you know, pretty much, they were blocking shots, their D-zone was great, they were getting pucks in deep, and it's hard to pick one kid, that, because really it was three lines in my five defensemen right across the board. And to be honest with you, if you look at the Beverly High hockey team, we have a ton of talented kids. We may not have the number one or number two talented kid on my team in the league, but I might have the next four or five, if you know what I mean. And that's what happened yesterday. They all came together, and we got a great goal from Dylan Zocco. And you know, then, you know, Matt Mezer in the middle of the ice. Didn't have any points last night. He's at the top of the leaderboard with points for us, but his line went toe-to-toe with Will Schell from Marblehead. There were so many kids. We got four different goal scorers. You know, Cam Cook, Austin Bernard, Dylan Zocco, and then our defenseman Jackson Thomas put in the empty netter. So we're getting that kind of support. We've got five or six kids with 7, 8, and 9 points. So we're not just a one or two man show. We can go at you with several different kids.
Tim, you might want to comment on that, because when your top scorer doesn't score but you still win 4-0, that shows, as Coach Fonzie just mentioned, you've got some depth there and some help everywhere, you know, on the team.
Yeah, well, certainly what that does for you, Coach, it certainly is, at least this game shows that teams can't focus on that one top player, that you guys have enough snipers out there that can take the pressure off of him. He can be that magnet to draw a defenseman away and leave an opening for a guy from, say, one of the weak sides.
Yeah, there's no doubt. you know, with our kids, I'm not sure I have, you know, anyone that is going to go out there and score 25 goals for me this year, but I might have five guys that are going to score 10 or 12 goals, and that's good enough. I mean, that's going to help us out. And you know what, the key to it, you know, all these kids work really hard, but when I look at the third line and how I was able to match them up with that team, that's a big, strong, good Marblehead team. They're the defending league champs. That allowed the rest of our guys to do their job and win the hockey game.
Greg, you mentioned the coaching fraternity in the NEC, and I also would also bring in the Cape Ann League. We've talked with so many of the coaches over the years, and Tim and I are both educators, and so we know that you guys are teachers above all else. This particular season, it's a shortened season. You mentioned, you know, no league championship or playoffs, that kind of thing. But the satisfaction of getting these kids out there and being able to compete and have some sense of a high school normal career has got to be very, very satisfying for you guys, in this pandemic. And it has to feel good as a coach and as a dad and as an educator, to be able to do this. And when you win, it's even extra special.
It's amazing we're doing it. And I think I told our athletic director, Mr. Keith, that it's probably the most important year of coaching I've ever had. You know, because I wasn't sure that we would even be here. And, I mean, some people, you know, they were a little worried about being here, but I felt this was probably the most important job I had as a coach all these years, to try and get these kids on the ice. And when you see them and how happy they are, it's worth it.
Yeah. Well, finally, Coach, you've got a big week coming up, a home game in Peabody on Wednesday, and then another home game in Lynn, is it, against Marblehead? So tell me a little bit about the week to come.
Well, you know what? I'm not going to go any further than Wednesday right now, because if we do that, we get ourselves in trouble. But I think we'll be ready to go. I would have loved to have played tonight. The kids wanted to play tonight. They haven't beaten Danvers in seven seasons, and they were looking forward to getting a chance to play that team tonight. It was the same thing against Marblehead the other night. We haven't had a lot of success. We're trying to change that. We're trying to change the culture here. We're trying to win games in the third period, which we're starting to do. And when we play Peabody on Wednesday night, it'll be the same thing. I think my kids will come out. They'll be ready to play. They'll skate every shift. We won't change a thing. And basically, you know, if we play well and we play the way that we're structured to play now, I like our chances every time we step on the ice.
Greg, congratulations, man. Great talking with you. I love the enthusiasm and how things are going. And we'll check in with you in a couple of weeks.
I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Coach.
Good luck, Coach.
Take care.
Thanks.
All right, that is Beverly High School hockey coach, boys hockey coach, Greg Fonzi. I have to make sure I say that. We're going to take a break here. Tim's on the other line here, and we're going to come back with Gary Larrabee. This is MSONewsSports.com. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and, of course, Bill Newell. And I don't know what that buzz is, but we'll figure it out in a minute here. We'll be right back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All righty, then. We are back now with Gary Larrabee, golf writer, sports historian. Gary, how are you?
I'm fabulous. How are you guys doing?
I'm okay. Tim?
Staying out of the rain at the moment.
Yeah, we have rain. Where is it where you are, Gary?
We have rain in Wyndham, which is good.
Okay. Yeah, I'm all over that. I was telling Tim that Harvey had us in the in the 1-3 zone, but then there was a line cutting right through Cape Ann that said 4-8. Then there was another line cutting through Cape Ann that said 10-16. So I don't know where we are, but I'm happy with the rain right now.
Well, we're always happy with the rain and the dead of winter, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we just got through a bone-chilling weekend, and now we're supposed to get a big storm. But these guys, the best news of the day is we're in February.
Well, you know, that's true. And I asked Tim before we went on the air here, was there a golf tournament over the weekend?
Of course.
Of course.
The tour was out in San Diego, where they're going to be playing the U.S. Open in June, the very same golf course, Torrey Pines. And I have some good news and bad news to talk about golf tonight. The bad news is that Patrick Reed, one of the most unpopular players in the history of the game, won the tournament by 5 shots.
And, he paid that for Tiger.
Yeah. Because for those of us who remember, Patrick Reed's been involved with an awful lot of questionable rulings and accusations of cheating when he was in college. But he is a hell of a player. This was his 9th PGA Tour win. He's won a Masters, as you may recall, and he won this tournament going away, even though he had another rules issue on Saturday. But he overcame that, and one of the bad news stories of the day is that Patrick Reed won the tournament out there in beautiful Torrey Pines.
What is it, Gary, that, you know, some guys are just with icons of correct play. Gary, you know, going back, Gary Player and Arnie and Jared, all the guys that played during that time. You never heard any of these things going on. And then you got Patrick Reed, who just sort of like goes against all norms and isn't afraid to push the boundaries, it seems. You know, does he knowingly violate these rules and kind of like waiting for someone to step up and correct him and he's hoping to get away? I mean, you know, a ball's in bed. You don't go picking it up. You have to call for an official and say, okay, what's the deal here? He just takes it upon himself to kind of make his own rules up.
No, you're right. He's a bit of a defiant type. But as you say, he thought his ball was embedded, even though the ball had bounced once. A bounced golf ball never embeds, because we have to embed on the second bounce, and that just never happens. Well, he got away with it. Question of his, he said, she said, and he got away with it nicely. So that's one piece of bad news from the weekend. The other piece of bad news, also from that same tournament, guys, is that our local hero out there on the PGA Tour, Rob Oppenheim, shot 72, 79, 151, missed the cut for the second time in 3 tournaments, and he's in a little bit of a bad funk right now. But I want to hear some good news.
Yeah, yeah.
Some good golfing news. You may have heard that that Dartmouth College had eliminated five sports from its varsity offerings, and one of those sports, of course, was golf. And, of course, that affects two of our favorites around here, the Turner brothers from Gloucester and Bass Rocks, James and Mark. Anyway, the story broke last week on a very popular, very, very credible golf internet website called Global Golf Post, GGP. And Jim Nugent, the editor of that publication, anyone can get it online. He wrote a fantastic story, inside story. I don't know how he got all the information on what's going on with Dartmouth and the way they dropped their golf team. And within like 3 days after that story broke, Dartmouth reversed its course and it's going to reinstate all these 5 courses. I think it's men's and women's golf. Men's and women, I'm not sure if it's swimming, but 5 sports and all, they're all going to be reinstated. So that's obviously great news for Mark and James Turner. And then whether they can put together, I presume they're going to put together a schedule for the spring. And we're very happy for the Turner brothers.
Exactly. Yeah, you got to wonder, you know, the decisions that some of these colleges have that just have megabucks sitting in their accounts, and yet they choose to eliminate these sports. And I'm sure golf, you know, we think, oh, well, can't cost that much. But then again, they're traveling to tournaments and all this. So there are expenses that are involved. But then again, move a football team all the way across the country. That's not cheap.
No, you're right. You make a very good point, though. Dartmouth is one of the most and best endowed universities in America. It's not Harvard. It's not Yale. You know, Harvard has an endowment of something like, I don't know, $67 billion.
Oh, jeez, yeah.
But Dartmouth does very well as the northernmost Ivy League school. And they had, and the fact remains, after they dumped golf, this was back in the fall, I might have been, in fact, right before the fall season would have started, except for the pandemic, they did develop the alumni, the golfing alumni at Dartmouth, put together a coalition. They raised over $500,000 to make the program possible, at least on the men's side, for this spring. But that will not, I guess, be necessary now. But it's one of those, you know, classic NCAA college two-faced, hypocritical policies.
Yep.
And as you mentioned, Tim, strange goings on up there in Hanover, but the great news is Mark and James will hopefully have some golf tournaments to play this spring for the good old Big Green.
Excellent. Excellent. You know, if you're going to have sports, you know, have it across the board on an equal standing, you know. Gary, I have to ask you, didn't Harris English win a tournament a few weeks ago?
Harris English, yes, he did.
He missed the cut at the Farmers as well. He shot a 150.
So didn't Jordan Spieth. You know, so didn't Jordan Spieth, who's on one of the longest slumps in the history of big-time golf for a player with having won four majors. English missed the cut. A lot of good players missed the cut along with Oppenheimer, and that included Jordan Spieth, who continues to be a big mystery out there. What's going on with him?
I love going through the full roster of guys. J.J. Choi finished tied for 69th, like, wow. You know, all of these big name guys, it's like, you know, these are the tournaments that you should be able to just feast on if you're one of these guys with high standings, or do you just mentally take the week off and get out of there for just a few easy rounds? Still one tied for 53rd.
I think they all wanted to play Torrey Pines because they're going to be going back there in June for the U.S. Open. So they want to get at least two rounds, and if not four, of competition. And Chris will have to see now if Patrick Reed can bring the same game back to Torrey Pines in June that he had at the end of January. But it's another mystery we've been talking about for years, Tim. Mystery of the game.
Yep.
You can be a Hall of Famer one week and win a tournament by 10 yards, and the next week you can miss the cut and be a real also-ran.
Yeah, that's how my game has gone most of my life, Gary.
Yeah, okay. Oh, good. Hey, Gary, anything else on your mind sports-wise? Tim and I were talking a little bit about Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes this weekend. And, you know, even as a casual fan, this should be one of the more fun Super Bowls to watch, you would hope.
I'd like to think so, particularly the fact they had a fantastic game during the regular season. And, of course, Tampa Bay seems to be playing the best they've played all year. I think they've won five or six in a row, Tim. And, of course, the other big issue is Tampa Bay's defense has been very underrated and not talked about too much, but the defense is making it possible for Brady to look good. And of course, here we go with his tenth Super Bowl appearance, and I'll have my Tom Brady Patriots number 12 jersey on Sunday afternoon. I'm sure there'll be thousands of other Patriots fans will be too, rooting for our favorite quarterback.
Well, you know, Gary, he had a 73 quarterback rating last week. Statistically, Rodgers, you know, outplayed him. But if you watch the game, it looked like Brady was getting the better of Rodgers. making really critical passes. He had those two, butterflies that floated out there, which are really bad and kind of like un-Tom-like. But his overall stats weren't good. But boy, when he had to put the ball on the dime, he put it there. And to me, the game comes down to is can Tampa Bay's defense slow down Mahomes and the Kansas City offense? Because you know Brady's going to score. They're going to put points on the board. But can Tampa Bay not give up more points than Brady can put on the board?
Good question. And, of course, KC has speed. But KC has been vulnerable this year on defense. They've always had a vulnerable defense. You saw that a couple of years ago in that classic AFC Championship game with the Patriots when they gave up 37 points at home in the biggest game of the almost of the history of the franchise. So anyways, it should be a great matchup. We certainly hope both teams play to their best, the very best. But I'd love to see Brady win number 7.
That'd be something. Hey, final question, Gary. This is way out from left field. You're a sports historian. You covered the Celtics for many years, and you're still a Celtics observer. How come the Celtics are called the Celtics and not the Celtics?
I think that's probably a translation that was converted when they decided to use the word Celtic. It had a better sound to it than
mm-hmm.
Celtic.
Yeah,
that is the pronunciation over. Across the border in the British Isles, is it not?
Yes, yes. Well, being Irish and visiting the old sod, I just wondered about that. Of course, the Celtics have always been the Celtics as far as I'm concerned, but you hear other people, when you see it in different contexts, it's Celtic. I'm like, wait a minute. No, it's not. It's Celtics. So maybe they got to get on board with what we do. Gary, we'll be back next Monday if you're willing.
Let's do it, and let's keep safe and happy and healthy this week.
Amen to that.
All right,
thanks,
Gary.
Take care, Gary.
Stay well, man.
All right, that is Gary Larrabee, a sports historian, golf writer, and former Celtic reporter or Celtic reporter. Tim, what's your take on that? Being Irish, what's that?
I totally agree. You watch the history shows, and they talk about the British trying to subdue the Celts.
Yeah.
They weren't trying to subdue the Celts.
It's confusing.
They were going to go play a game in Dublin. We denounced them as the Celtic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, maybe Mike has a different take on that. We're going to check it with Mike Grenier in just a couple of seconds here. You're listening to MSO News Sports. This is North Shore Sports Night. And if I can find the right connection to hit here, Kearns is my man here on the board, but he's not been able to be here for what's it been now, Tim? Almost a year?
Yeah, it'll be a year next month.
Good heavens. All right. We'll be back. Stay with us, please.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, Tim, Mike's with us. What's your question with Mike Grenier, Tim?
All right, Mike, we're looking for the correct pronunciation. Is it the Boston Celtics or the Boston Celtics?
Well, I was just listening to you guys discuss that. Obviously, I think it's the correct pronunciation. Should be Celtic. Rick, I go back, I love Irish music.
Uh-huh, yeah, oh yeah.
And there was a show that was on, the PBS radio station I used to listen to, it was called Celtic Sojourn.
Yes.
Celtic Sojourn. So unless ML Carr hosted it and changed it to Celtic Sojourn.
That could be it.
It should have been as a, you know, it's Celtic Search. So, you know, realistically, they should be called the Boston Celtics.
All right, there's two things here. First of all, you're a Frenchman, yeah?
Yeah, okay. I am. I'm Francais all the way.
Okay, you're a Frenchman. You're a French Canadian.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, you know, we'd expect you to be talking about Canadien. But I bet you, I just have a feeling, and Tim, I don't know what you think about this, but I have a feeling that the pronunciation goes back to Red Auerbach somehow. Somehow he had his finger in this, I bet you.
Yep. Well, the team was established in 1946. That's when the league started. That's the Celtics, the originals. So, yeah, I have a feeling, you know, he was involved, excuse me, from the get-go. And, yeah, they went with Celtics. And that's what it became. And now it's nearly like 80 years later, and they're the Boston Celtics, you know. And right now, they're not playing so well.
No. And we need to get to that because I watched maybe maybe three quarters the other night against the Lakers, and it didn't even have my interest, Mike. It just didn't look like a game, and I was surprised to see that they lost by only 1 point.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I looked at it in several different ways that night. The two things I noticed. One is that they're getting crushed on the offensive glass. I mean, they gave up too many second shots, even when their best players were on the floor. And secondly, when I looked at it, I was not that I was surprised, but the Celtics starters, you know, especially Tatum and Jaylen Brown played very well, you know, and the Celtics starters outscored the Lakers by 19, okay? And LeBron James did not, for LeBron James' standards, he had a very mediocre game, but the bench was outscored. The Celtics bench, or the Celtics bench, outscored 35-15. 35-15.
Yeah.
How do you make up when you have a bench that's that feeble? You're not going to win against the good teams. You just can't make up that kind of 20-point deficit. Not that it happens every night, but you can't get outscored 35-15 on the bench. And that's what happened the other night. And naturally, too, part of the reason for that is, you know, they lost Marcus Smart early in the game. He's out for a couple of weeks. So they're on this road trip going right now, guys, right? 5 games in 7 nights, 3 games in 4 nights at the start of the trip, starting at Golden State tomorrow. They get Sacramento. Golden State, not bad. Utah will be playing. They have, like, the best record in the NBA. The Clippers have, like, the second or third best record in the NBA. Phoenix, which is an improved team. So potentially there, I don't know what kind of record they come back with after 7 days. 2-3? I don't know. They're only at 2 games over .500 right now. And then, of course, you know, Marcus Smart is out probably for 2 weeks, maybe a little more.
MRI, Mike?
I'm sorry?
What was the diagnosis of the MRI?
It was a strained calf. It was the best-case scenario, Tim. In other words, some people were speculating initially it could be the Achilles or a type of calf injury that would keep him out longer than 2 weeks, you know, and fortunately, it came back with the best possible scenario, which is somewhere around 2 weeks. So, but that certainly knocks them out of the West Coast trip, and it obviously hurts their depth. And Peyton Pritchard, the rookie, was averaging almost 8 points a game. He's out, although he's starting to come around. So you should look at the stats. You know, Marcus Smart was averaging almost 14 a game. Pritchard was averaging 8. That's 22 points down the tubes right now that you don't have for the next couple of weeks. It's concerning because they're not getting much production from the bench. And although if there's a bright spot off the bench, right, guys, it's been Robert Williams. He's kind of developing into their best big man. He blocks shots. He rebounds. He doesn't have much of an offensive game. But he certainly has outdistanced, I think, Tristan Thompson for playing time. I think he's playing much better than Tristan Thompson right now.
I'm trying to think. He's like a Wes Unseld type. When I see him out there, he is just a big body that would rather go through you than around you. You know,
yeah, he's quick off his feet too.
Yeah, he's maybe in time he'll develop something of an offensive game. I know Unseld came into the game a lot more polished than he did, but just size wise, he's just a big hulking kid that's not afraid to go in there and mix it up.
Right, and he's not, and he's made good strides this year. Good strides compared to a year ago when he was banged up a lot and didn't get much playing time. But you know, he's really quick off his feet. He finishes at the basket. You know, he takes those lob passes. He's got great athletic skill. Okay, so you're kind of hopeful that he can keep developing. And you know, we have to talk about Kemba Walker for a minute, guys, right? Because the other night, you know, 2 or 3 seconds left in the game, he gets a pass. He clears a path for himself for like a little, you know, kind of a fadeaway jumper from about 9 or 10 feet. He misses it. He finished 1 for 12 from the floor. And, you know, it was a major disappointment, because you could see the disappointment as the players left the court, particularly from the two big guns, you know, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. They both looked extremely disappointed that they couldn't close out that game. And Kemba Walker, being one of the top three players on that team, finished 1 for 12. I mean, yeah, a missed shot, that happens, but Kemba already was only 1 for 11, so how did he wind up with the final shot, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that's going to be on Brown and Tatum's minds, too, and they will probably admit to it. But, like,
yeah.
it's your first and second game back. You're still trying to get into the flow.
Yeah.
You know, these guys are averaging basically 27 points a game, you know, and can pretty much score at will on any player. How do you not draw the defense to you and then look one
right.
of those two guys?
Well, you know, I mean, Jaylen Brown looked like he was open on that play. And, you know, those are the guys, those two guys, Tatum and Brown, you know, you combine have been averaging 55 points a game, all right?
Hey.
So, you know, it's just there's some issues with the Celtics right now, and you hope they figure it out, because this road trip, if they don't do well, they can come back, be 2 or 3 games below 500, and be somewhere like 6th or 7th in the Eastern Conference as opposed to 3rd.
Mike,
you know,
can we roll it out a little bit? Let's bring the camera back on, instead of zooming in. Let's zoom out. Let's look at the league, because first of all, LeBron seems to defy age. He seems to be the man again. And then I want to know about Pat Connaughton, how he's doing.
You know, Pat Connaughton the other night, 2 nights ago, five 3-pointers and 8 tries, 15
Whoa.
Points. He is playing that ultimate role of distributor, playmaker. He rebounds much better than his size dictates he should rebound for a 6'4 kid. He's shooting 48%, 47% on 3-pointers for the season. 47%, which ranks, he hasn't probably qualified in terms of the number of attempts, because he comes out, he doesn't take that many shots, but you can shoot 47% on threes, you're going to do your team a big favor, because, you know, in a reserve role. He gives them so many different things, and I noticed that a guy like Jeff Van Gundy, who does the national games, notices the things that Connaughton does, and will mention it on national TV. There's an offensive rebound. There's a great pass. He mentions those kinds of things that coaches appreciate on the sidelines, you know, that the general public may not see because he's not out there averaging 16, 17 points a game.
Hmm.
But, yeah, he's played a really tremendous role for the Milwaukee Bucks, who, again, though, we're looking at the Bucks right now. You know, they're the team that won like 60, 62 games last year, and they're only 3 games over 500. So they're not playing much better than the Celtics right now. But from a local level, this kid, Pat Connaughton, by the way, 10 years ago, is when Connaughton led St. John's Prep of Danvers to the state championship. And we covered all of those great games, including the state finals at DCU Center in Worcester, when they beat St. John's of Shrewsbury. And you guys may not know this, but the star of the St. John's of Shrewsbury team that year and that day was a guy by the name of Richard Rogers, who is still in the NFL. He went 2 years to Cal Berkeley for football scholarship, came out, and was Aaron Rodgers, one of the guys he threw the ball to
right.
in his early years in the NFL. So those guys are both still playing. Pat Connaughton from St. John's Prep and Richard Rogers, who played for St. John's of Shrewsbury. But yeah, 10 years ago, this season is when St. John's Prep won their only state championship in boys in basketball.
Tim?
I think of Connaughton, and I think of a guy who accepts his role.
Yep, exactly.
You know, there are a lot of guys out there that seem to want to be so much more, and in trying to do that, they totally miss the boat.
Yep.
And, you know, Pat's not, it's kind of like a Larry Bird. He's not blessed with the greatest speed,
right,
but he's quick. You know, he's not blessed with the greatest vertical, but he can get his man up in the air and give and free himself up. He plays probably so far above his talent level as compared to other players in the NBA. That's giving him staying power because he
that's
makes
right.
good decisions. You know, he knows how to play tough defense. He's anticipating the ball. He's seeing the court, and a lot of these guys just see the basket.
Yeah, oh yeah, Mike Budden, I know for a fact, having gone to the Celtics games when they play the Milwaukee Bucks, Mike Budenholzer, the head coach of the Bucks, loves Connaughton's game because of what you just said, Tim. He knows what you're saying, I think, in a way, Tim, is that Connaughton knows his limitations. Therefore, he plays within himself. That's an old phrase, right? He plays within those limitations. He can score a bit. He can rebound a bit. He passes very well. And he won't go outside of those parameters and try to do too much. He's not going to take a layup against Anthony Davis. He's not going to do stupid things on the floor. He's a very intelligent player. He got that from playing for Sean Conley coaching at St. John's Prep, and he got that playing for Mike Bray at Notre Dame. And he played two sports there, baseball and basketball. Intelligent kid who has made the most of it. Really, to this day, most people tell you he would have been a better baseball player than a basketball player, Connaughton, because he was drafted by the Orioles, and he decided to give basketball a shot instead of baseball because he loved the game of basketball more than he did baseball. And now he's in his sixth year in the league, and, you know, he's carved out a career for himself, and the Bucks rewarded him in the offseason with a 3-year, $15 million contract, okay? So he's that role player who's making decent money now, and he'll give the team... You won't hear him criticizing teammates or opposing. Pat Connaughton is a total team player. I mean, I know him so well over the years, and he will stick to that role that you mentioned him. He plays within the team concept of what Mike Budenholzer wants them to do. And I know the guys like, Giannis and Drew Holiday and the guy, Chris Middleton, they all appreciate what he brings to the table night after night.
Well, Mike, go ahead, Tim.
Have you ever sat down and talked to Pat, Mike?
Many times.
How he sees himself fitting in to the league, how he sees himself fitting into the Bucks, and did he choose basketball over baseball because it would be a bigger challenge for him to succeed there?
Yep, in many ways, yes, he did. He did. I remember one interesting conversation I had with him where he said to me, Mike, if I were playing like in a state tournament baseball game, and I was on the mound, because he was a pitcher, as you know, who could throw like 95, 97. He said, if I was a pitcher on the mound in the middle of a state tournament game, and there was a street ball game, a basketball, on the adjacent court, I would get out of my uniform and go play, you know, the hard court game. That kind of showed you where his first love is, you know, and that's why he chose basketball, because like you said, it was a bigger challenge, and I think in his mind he felt that when he was drafted in the second round, you know, and he ended up with Portland his first couple of years, the Portland Trailblazers, I think he felt that, okay, if it didn't work out in the NBA in year number one, his rookie year, then he would have been able to have the opportunity maybe to go back to baseball, okay? But it worked out that first year in Portland, and a one-year career became a 2 years with the Portland Trailblazers, and then four years with the Bucks. So he's carved out a niche for himself, a role, and you know, who knows how much longer he's going to play. But he's in the rotation for the Bucks, one of the best teams in the NBA, and he loves playing for them, and he's a terrific role player.
You know, we think of the successful teams that the Celtics have had over the years. And there's always been that one guy on the bench who comes in and adds a spark, adds some energy, but at the same time brings a calming presence
to the
team. That you know when he goes in there, he's not going to panic, going to make good decisions. You know, and we think back to the South in the 80s, and even when they won in 08, they had a couple of guys there coming off the bench that understood their role. And that
if we bring up the most recent Celtics championship team, 2008, who were the good role players? Leon Poe, Eddie House, those guys. That, when I think of Connaughton, he would have fit in with that 2008 team in that kind of role, coming off the bench for Doc Rivers and contributing 8-10 points and playing good defense and making some good passes. He would have been represented that team. He would have fit in beautifully with that, playing that kind of role for the 2008 championship Celtics team.
Hey, Mike, once again, Tim, we got to cut this short here. I got to get one more interview out here with Matt Karakoudis, the Beverly High School boys basketball coach. Mike, we'll do it again Monday.
That sounds great, and try to avoid the driving in the snow, guys.
Absolutely, absolutely. Stay safe, Mike. Great talking with you.
We will. Yeah, take care.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, that's Mike Grenier. Coach, any final thoughts? Tim?
No.
Okay. Okay, well, that's kind of, let me write that down, the date.
Cut me off from Mike. Yeah, he was going to get my last thought.
Okay, so did I make you angry now?
No.
Okay.
Just not talking to you anymore.
Okay. Okay. I'm writing that down too. All right, we'll be, that's it. We do have, Coach Matt Karakoudis coming up here from Beverly High School Boys Basketball. I'm Rick Moore. That's Tim Kearns, the angry Tim Kearns. And of course, we've got, Bill Proposky, our, producer and engineer, and Bill Newell. Thank you for being with us. And Coach, we will talk again next Monday.
Yes, we will. You will hear me. You won't see me.
All right. I can't wait for you to get back in studio here. That is Tim Kearns. We'll be finishing up again with Matt Karakoudis. Thank you for being with us. All right. We're back now with Beverly High School boys basketball coach Matt Karakoudis. And, Matt, it was just yesterday we were at the Boston Garden, wasn't it?
It really was. You know, it's crazy to look back and think that that's literally the day before all this started. The very next day after the Garden game, everything shut down, you know, so looking back in hindsight, we're extremely lucky to have got that game in at the Garden.
Not only that, but I remember there was a buzz about hand washing and stuff at that time. The masks weren't even thought of, I don't think, but everybody was sort of being a little extra cautious, but the games were fantastic, and although you were disappointed, I remember you were quite proud of your team.
Oh, for sure. I mean, like, that was a historic season, you know, for Beverly basketball. Probably, you know, the best season they've ever had. To fall short against a team like Whitman Hanson in that type of game, you know, there's nothing to hang your heads about. They're an unbelievable team. They were the better team, and they were the better team that night. They're a top team in the state. I think they finished, you know, third in the state. And to go 21-3, and our only three losses were to English, Lowell, and Whitman Hanson, two state title teams, and the other team was third in the state. So can't hang your head about that.
Oh, God, no. And Coach, before we get into this year's team, what's your opinion about not playing, or will you guys, when things open up again, maybe next season, will you be playing English and Classical? Will they be on your schedule even though they're going into the GBL?
I will do my best. I know Classical and I have already talked, and we should be playing Classical. That's already kind of a done deal.
Nice.
And Lynn English, I've already talked to Coach Anderson, and he'll have a tougher time making his schedule because he has to go out and play in a lot of these tournaments that most teams don't play in. But we're going to try to get them on the schedule. We'll try to get Lowell on the schedule again. And we're really going to have to try to load up the schedule because next year with the new tournament style, it goes by strength of schedule or seeding for the tournament. And we are also moving up to Division One, so the road gets even longer for us.
You know, Matt, it's funny, but I think it's, I don't know if this makes any sense, but I think it's great that even though you're in the middle of this season, you're already looking forward to next year, because it just seems like the cloud will be lifted very soon here, and we'll have, you know, some kind of a normal deal. So you are looking forward to that. But closer to home now, you guys are off to a great start.
We are. We're playing pretty well. I mean, it's early in the year. We have a very young team this year, and we're going through some immaturity on the court, you know, some growing pains, which was to be expected. But I'm happy with how the guys are playing. A lot of them, even though they're young, they were around to see what we did last year and what it takes to get there. And they're buying in, so they're working hard, and 4-0 start, so we're excited.
Before we get in deep with your kids, I got to ask you this. Is there anything so far that's been easier to deal with than you thought before the season started? Because, you know, we didn't even know if we were going to have a winter season and, you know, an indoor season. But is there anything that's gone on with your kids, with the practices, with the games or whatever, that's, hey, this is okay, we can deal with this. It's a little easier than what I thought it might be.
Yeah, honestly, I know it's crazy, but it really is not much different. It really isn't. In terms of things being easier, I think there's even more structure this year, and more discipline with all the protocols that are put in place, not by myself, but by the school and just, you know, the cities and the MIAA. So it's kind of, in a way, made a lot of things easier, because you know exactly what you have to do. You don't really have many choices in a lot of the matter.
Have you guys picked up with you and your assistants, have you done some Zoom teaching as well, like some of the other teams are doing?
We the coaches had some Zoom meetings in the off season together, and the kids did a lot of working out in the off season on their own, and they got together as a group, socially distanced on the turf field and stuff like that, and met. And we pretty much stayed in touch throughout text messages and phone calls.
Excellent. All right, so what's the strengths of this year's team so far?
Without a doubt, it's perimeter shooting. We can really shoot the three ball this year, which is the complete opposite of our team last year. I mean, we had some good shooters last year, but everybody knows we were pounding the ball down low to Duncan and Jack. And this year, we're more of a perimeter-based team. The last three games, we've hit 15 threes, 14 threes, and 11 threes. So, I mean, we can really stroke it, and we can score the ball.
Well, I was going to say, your scores are ridiculous here. You got 93 points against Gloucester?
Yeah. And, you know, and nothing poor to say about Gloucester, but that we just were shooting the ball so well, and we were playing so hard. I mean, our guys, they got up big, and they're still diving on the floor for loose balls late in the game, and I think that just says a lot about our guys. I mean, no matter what the score was, no matter whether it was starters or bench guys, that they were coming to play.
Well, Coach, the other thing, looking at your scores, you know, you've got some offense, but you've held the other team down too, so good team defense?
For sure. But still a big learning curve defensively for us, for the young guys. And I, you know, again, I hate to keep mentioning Duncan and Jack, but they're anchors for us on both ends of the floor last year, defensively as well, and rebounding the basketball.
Yeah, great.
Those are things we're trying to learn, you know, on the fly. And one of the good things about this season is, without a tournament and without a conference championship, you know, you're lucky to be playing games. So we're taking this season, it's almost like one large preseason building for next season, because we have 11 guys out of the 13 returning next year.
I love the way you're looking at that.
You know, it's a two-year process,
yeah,
really.
I like that. That's cool, and it also gives us something to look forward to. Are you getting a lot of kids into the games?
Yeah, we've got 13 guys on the roster, and I know in two of the four games, all 13 guys have checked in, and in some of the games that maybe were a little bit tighter, we still went 10 deep.
That's got to feel good, and that's got to help down the road as well. Okay, let's focus in. Tell me about you know, some of the guys you're relying on right now for leadership.
Yep. Leadership wise, we got two juniors who are doing a great job, Tristan Abreu and Nick Braganka. Tristan Abreu's off to a great start. He's playing the best I've seen him play. And honestly, I feel he's playing up to his capabilities that I knew he was capable of doing. He's averaging right around 15 points a game. He's hit, I think, 11 threes in four games for us. Nick Braganka is playing excellent defense. He he's a leader out there. He does a lot of the talking on defense. He's rebounding the ball real well. And then we've got some really, really nice young guys that can score the ball and handle the ball. We got Gabe Copeland, who came back. He had some big games for us last year as a freshman. He's leading us in scoring right now with, I think, around 18 per game. Made 11 threes in the first four games.
Mm-hmm.
And our point guard, who's a sophomore, Rook Landman, is playing excellent. He's averaging 10 points, just about 5.5, almost 6 assists a game, and playing great defense. And he's a guy that him and Treston, a lot of people don't realize, Treston started for us last year at the beginning of the year, and Rook was our sixth man. And we played the entire second half of the year without them due to injury. So they didn't play in the tournament or at the Garden or anything.
So, okay.
So to have them come back, you know, and be healthy and is just great.
How are you looking at the schedule? And I know, I don't know, the league is just, everything's crazy with the schedule, the shortened schedule and so on. But, you know, big win over Masco, no trouble with Winthrop. Gloucester looks pretty good, and you guys handled them easily. Marblehead. What's that?
The schedule really is kind of like a mishmash. I mean, we have a schedule in place, but a lot of the games have been changed, pushed back, pushed up, and we're pretty much just, hey, and we're going to try to as we can.
Okay. So, now, Saugus, have they played yet? Did I lose you, Matt?
No, I'm still here.
Okay. Has Saugus played? Because you got Saugus next. Have they played a game yet?
Yeah, Saugus has played, I believe, 4 games.
Oh, okay.
I believe they're either 1-3 or 2-2. I'm not positive.
All right, but they are playing because I know this red zone stuff and all that. It confuses the hell out of me.
Yeah, they were one of the teams though that started later in the season.
Okay. All right, so you got Saugus on Friday night. Now the next question is: are parents allowed to come to your games?
For home games, each player is allowed. Two family members, immediate family members that live in the home with them.
Okay.
And no one is allowed on the road.
Right. Oh, my goodness. And your games, are your games being streamed as well, video streaming?
Yes, BevCam does an excellent job. They shoot the game live. You can watch it on YouTube or on Beverly TV.
Okay.
And they do an amazing job.
All right. So we'll make sure we have that linked as well. Coach, this is great. And it's really... It gives me hope, you know, that you're doing this. The kids are out there playing now, but you also have an eye on next season when things ought to be a whole lot better, and that's pretty exciting. And you have how many seniors do you have?
We only have 2.
Okay,
we're bringing back 11 out of the 13 guys.
All right, and finally, Matt, the kids who left last year, your seniors, it was a horrible way to end the year. What are they doing now? Have you made contact with any of them? They're in school?
I have. I keep in touch with all of my guys. Duncan is at UNH on a football scholarship, but they didn't play football this year.
Right.
But he's still there. And Jack went to Worcester State, but actually just transferred back home to Salem State, where he's looking to play basketball.
Excellent, excellent. Coach, this is great. I'll check in with you in a couple of weeks. I know there's not going to be any tournament and stuff like that, but there is hope.
It's got to get better sooner than later, I hope, you know?
Yeah, I know. I love it. That's Matt Karakoudis, who is the Beverly High School boys basketball coach. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.